Be careful.
I scowled at Garrett through the chain-link fence as I dropped to the other side. Well, not the other side. The other side of the fence. Yeah, I got that much from Uncle Bob, I said, my voice acidic. I'd lost the argument. Despite the fact that I'd had lots of practice, losing wasn't my forte. Garrett followed suit, climbing the 8-foot chain-link fence with way more upper body strength than I had and dropping beside me. But could he tie a knot in a cherry stem with his tongue? We started out across the open field toward the warehouse. It took most of my concentration to keep from falling, and even more of my concentration to keep from clutching onto Garrett's jacket for balance.
I read that grim reapers collect souls, he said, jogging beside me.
I tripped on a cactus and just barely managed to catch myself. Night was so dark, probably because of the time. The moonlight helped, but traversing the uneven ground still proved challenging. Swopes, I said, breathing slowly so he wouldn't realize I was getting winded. There are oodles of souls running around, wreaking havoc upon my life. Why would I collect the darn things? And even if I did, where would I keep all the jars? He didn't answer. We sprinted across the parking lot to the back of the windowless building. Luckily, it had no security cameras, but I could tell from the soft glow illuminating the roof line that it did have skylights. If I could get to the roof, I might be able to see what they were up to. No good, surely, but I did need some kind of evidence to back that up. When Garrett pulled me behind a grouping of garbage bins, I bumped into a metal pipe that led all the way up and over the roof line with brackets every few feet for stability. Perfect footholds. Hey, give me a boost, I whispered. What? No, Garrett argued, eyeing the post faithlessly. He shoved me aside nonetheless. I'll go up. I'm lighter, I argued back. This pipe won't hold you. Even though I was pretty much arguing for argument's sake, the pipe did look a tad flimsy, and it had more rust than a New Mexico sunset. I'll go up and check out the skylights. Odds are I won't be able to see in, but maybe I can find a hole. Maybe I can make a hole, I said, thinking aloud.
Then the guys inside will make a hole as well, and your obstinate head, probably two if history is any indication.
I studied the pipe while Garrett ranted something incoherent about holes and history. I'd chosen that particular moment not to understand a word he said. When he was finished, I turned to him. Do you even know English? Give me a boost, I added when his brows furrowed in confusion. Shouldering past him, I gripped the pipe with both hands. He let an annoyed breath slip through his lips before stepping forward and grabbing my ass. Thrilling? Yes. Appropriate? Not in your life. I slapped his hands away. What the hell are you doing?
You said to give you a boost.
Yes, a boost, not a cheap thrill. He paused, looked down at me a long, uncomfortable moment. What did I say? Cup your hands, I ordered before he got all mushy. If you can get me to the first bracket, I can take it from there. Reluctantly, he put one hand in the other and bent forward. I'd brought my gloves to go with my black-on-black ensemble, so I slipped them on, placed one foot in Garrett's cupped hands, then hoisted myself up to the first brace. Easy enough with his upper body strength and all, but the second was a tad trickier. The sharp metal of the brackets tried to cut its way through my gloves, making my fingers ache instantly. I struggled to hold on to the pipe, struggled to keep my footing, and struggled to lift my own weight to the next bracket. Surprisingly, the worst pain centered in my knees and elbows as I used them for leverage against the metal building, slipping and squirming far more often than was likely appropriate. A decade later, I pulled myself up and over the roofline. The metal cap scraped agonizingly into my rib cage as if mocking me, as if saying, "You're kind of dumb, huh?" I collapsed on the roof and lay completely still a full minute, marveling at how much harder that had been than I thought it would be. I'd have hell to pay in the morning. If Garrett had been half a gentleman, he would have offered to climb the pipe in my stead.
"You okay?" he whispered into the radio.
I tried to respond, but my fingers were locked in a claw-like position from clinging onto the brackets for dear life, and they couldn't push the little button on the side of the radio.
"Davidson," he hissed.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I pried my fingers apart and pulled the radio out of my jacket pocket. "I'm fine, Swopes. I'm trying to wallow in self-pity. Would you give me a minute?"
"We don't have a minute," he said. "The doors are opening again."
I didn't waste time with a response. After rolling to my feet, I hunkered down and crept to the skylights. They were actually greenhouse panels, but they were old and cracked and had more than one peephole I could see through. To do so, however, to be able to see down into the warehouse, I'd have to almost lie across a panel. A thin beam of light shot up through one of the cracks, and I leaned into a push-up, my wobbly arms braced on either side. As long as the metal frame held, I figured I wouldn't fall through the roof, which would be a plus. The van was driving out of the warehouse when I peeked down. Two men were boxing up papers and files from an old desk. Other than the desk, the warehouse itself, at least 50,000 square feet of space, was completely and startlingly empty. Not a candy wrapper or cigarette butt in sight. My concerns had been well-founded. Whoever owned this warehouse cleaned it out the moment Carlos Rivera met with Barber. My arms still shook from the climb, and I was deeply regretting the tacos and 44-ounce soda I'd inhaled. 44 ounces was 44 ounces. Calorie-free or not, it weighed the same. Time to make like a sheep. As I inched back on the metal frame, I rehearsed my told-you-so speech to Uncle Bob. The warehouse was empty. Yes, just like I said it would be. I know I was right, but... Really, Uncle Bob, stop. You're embarrassing me. No, really, stop it. I'm not kidding. It was about the time I was imagining my reluctant appearance and off-the-cuff speech at the really, really right award ceremony that my mind processed movement. Something flashed in my periphery, a fist, possibly, and was quickly followed by a burst of pain in my jaw. Then all I could think as I fell through the skylight was, "Holy crap!" Chapter 9. You know you have ADD when, "Look! A chicken!" T-shirt. I first saw him the day I was born. His hooded cloak undulated in majestic waves like the shadows cast by leaves in a soft breeze. He'd looked down at me while the doctor cut the cord. I knew he was looking down at me, even though I couldn't see his face. He'd touched me as the nurses cleaned my skin, though I couldn't feel his fingertips. And he'd whispered my name, husky and deep and soft, though I couldn't hear his voice, probably because I was screaming at the top of my lungs, having recently been evicted. Since that day, I'd seen him only on the rarest of occasions, all dire. So it made sense that I would see him now, the occasion being dire and all. As I fell through the skylight, the cement floor rushing toward me at the speed of light, he was there, looking up at me from below, though I couldn't see his face. I tried to stop in midair, tried to pause my descent, to hover for a better look. But gravity insisted that I continue my downward journey. Then somewhere in the dark and scary, and some would say psychotic, recesses of my mind, I remembered. I remembered what he'd whispered to me the day I was born. My mind instantly rejected the idea because the name he'd whispered wasn't mine. He'd called me Dutch on the very day I was born. How did he know? While I was busy reminiscing about my first day on Earth, I'd forgotten that I was falling to my death. Damned ADD. I was reminded quite effectively, however, when I stopped. I hit hard, and the air rushed out of my lungs. Yet he was still looking up at me. That meant I hadn't made it to the ground. I hit something else, something metal, before flipping back and crashing onto steel grating. An excruciating pain exploded in my midsection and ripped through me like a nuclear blast, so severe, so startlingly intense it stole my breath and darkened my vision until I felt myself liquefy and slip through the grates. And as darkness crept around the edges of my consciousness, I saw him again, leaning over me, studying me. I tried so hard to focus, to block out the pain watering my eyes and blurring my vision. But I ran out of time before I could manage it, and everything went black. An inhuman growl, angry and full of pain, echoed off the walls of the empty warehouse, shook the metal of the building until it hummed like a tuning fork in my ears, though I couldn't hear his voice. It seemed like the moment I lost consciousness, I found it again. It certainly wasn't where I'd left it. Still, I was breathing and coherent. Amazingly, the old saying was right. It isn't the fall that will kill you, but the sudden stop. I tried to pry open my lids. I failed. Either I wasn't really conscious, or Garrett had found a tube of superglue and was getting even for the salsa incident. While I waited for my eyelids to realize they were supposed to be in the upright position, I listened to him babble into the radio, something about my having a pulse. Always a welcome observation. His fingertips rested on my neck.
"I'm here," Uncle Bob blurted breathlessly through the radio.
Then I heard footsteps on metal steps and sirens in the background. Garrett must have sensed I was awake.
"Hey, detective," he said to Uncle Bob, who was now trudging across the grating toward us. "I think we're losing her. I have no choice but to perform mouth-to-mouth."
"Don't you dare," I said, my lids still in lockdown. He laughed under his breath.
"Bloody hell, Charlie,"
Uncle Bob said in a wheezy voice that sounded more concerned than angry. Maybe the rubber band at his wrist was working after all.
"What happened?"
"I fell."
"No shit."
"Someone hit me."
"Again? I didn't realize it was National Kill Charlie Davidson Week."
"Do we get a vacation day with that?"
Garrett asked. Uncle Bob must have flashed him his famous glower, because Garrett jumped up and said,
"Right, I'm on it."
He took off, supposedly in search of the assailant. The sirens were getting closer, and I heard men shuffling about below me.
"Is anything broken?"
Uncle Bob's voice had softened. "My eyelids, I think. I can't open them." I heard a soft chuckle.
"If it were anyone else, I'd say eyelids can't be broken. But considering the source..."
A weak grin spread across my face. "So I'm, like, special?" He snorted as he pressed gingerly here and there, testing for broken bones and the like.
"Special wouldn't even begin to cover it, my dear."
Miracles happen. I figured I was living proof. To walk away, well, to limp away with lots of help, from a fall like that without a single broken bone was nothing short of miraculous, with a capital M.
"We really should get some x-rays," the EMT said to Uncle Bob as I lounged on the stretcher.
Ambulances were cool. "You just want to fondle my extraneous body parts," I said to the EMT as I picked up a silver gadget that looked disturbingly like an alien orifice probe. Broke it, then promptly put it back, hoping it wouldn't leave someone's life hanging in the balance because the EMT couldn't alien probe his orifices. EMT guy chuckled and checked my blood pressure for the gazillionth time. "Really, Uncle Bob, I'm fine. Who owns this warehouse?" Uncle Bob closed his phone and looked at me through the open doors of the ambulance.
"Well, if you're hoping for a neon sign above his head that flashes bad guy, you're going to be very disappointed."
"Don't tell me. The guy's a canonized saint?"
"Close. His name is Father Federico Diaz."
"Wow. Why would a Catholic priest own a warehouse in the middle of nowhere? Why would a Catholic priest own a warehouse, period? This case was getting more bizarre by the minute."
"No one," Garrett said, jogging up to us. "I don't understand it. If there were two guys inside and one on the roof, where'd they go?"
"The van was the only vehicle on the premises. They had to leave on foot,"
Uncle Bob said, scanning the area with a quizzical look on his face. "Or not leave at all," I added. "Where are the boxes?" They both turned around and surveyed the empty warehouse.
"What boxes?" Uncle Bob asked.
"Exactly." I eased off the stretcher, handed the broken probe to the EMT, who reattached the alien part and put it back with a grin, then stepped to the ground with far more wincing than was socially acceptable.
"I have three words for you," EMT guy said. "Possible internal bleeding."
I turned back to him. "Don't you think if I was bleeding internally, I'd know somewhere deep inside, like, internally?"
"One x-ray," he bargained.
When I winced again, he added,
"Maybe two."
Uncle Bob wrapped a beefy arm around me. I was a nanosecond away from arguing with EMT guy when he said,
"Charlie, we have men all over the place. I promise we'll look for your missing boxes.
But..."
"You're going to the hospital if I have to handcuff you to that stretcher,"
Garrett said, stepping in front of me as if to block my only escape route. With an annoyed sigh, I folded my arms and glared at him. "Stop trying to get me into your handcuffs. I want to be there when you talk to Father Federico," I said to Uncle Bob, ignoring Garrett's surprised expression. Would he never learn?
"Deal," Uncle Bob agreed before I could change my mind. "I'll call you tomorrow with the time."
"You'll need a ride home from the hospital," Garrett reminded me.
You just want to try out those handcuffs. I'll call Cookie. Go figure out where those boxes went.
Do you want to look at mugshots tomorrow as well? Uncle Bob asked. Can you ID the guy who hit you?
Well, my nose scrunched as I considered the possibility of positively identifying my assailant based on the knuckle sandwich he gave me. I got an almost clear peripheral look at the guy's left fist. I might could recognize his pinky. For some bizarre reason that baffled the heck out of me, Cookie seemed none too happy about being called out at 1 a.m. to extract me from the hospital.
What did you do now? She asked, walking into the examining room.
Still in her pajama bottoms, with a massive robe-like sweater thrown over a tee, she looked a tad post-apocalyptic, and she had a wicked case of bedhead. It was funny. I eased off the examining table, moving as if there were a bomb in the room set to go off with a motion-detecting sensor. She rushed to my side to help. Had there actually been a bomb set to go off with a motion-detecting sensor, we'd have been blown to bits. Why are you assuming it was my fault? I asked when my feet were firmly planted. Her lips thinned into a grim reprimand.
Do you have any idea what it's like to get a call from the hospital in the middle of the night? I jump into panic mode. I can barely put two words together.
I'm sorry. After limping to my jacket, I shrugged into it, amazed at how much effort it took not to pass out. You probably thought something happened to Amber.
Are you kidding? Amber's an angel compared to you. Having you around makes me appreciate her pubescent hormone-induced ways. Honestly, I don't know how your stepmother did it.
A light bulb went off in my head when she said that. Not a particularly bright one, maybe a 12-watter, but it did make me reassess my stepmother's lack of interest in my well-being. Perhaps our rocky relationship was partially my fault.
Not.
Cookie lectured me all the way home. Thankfully, I'd had the ambulance take me to Prez, so it was a short drive. Her concern was sweet, and at the same time, oddly annoying. My concern, however, was leaning toward homicidal. Hard as I tried, I couldn't help but get a little hot under my $7 thrift store Gucci collar. Someone hit me. Someone tried to kill me. Had he succeeded, I could have died. Then, as if my perpetual state of sunshine couldn't allow such a negative thought to infect my mind, I'm pretty sure I was a flower child in a past life. I just had to see the cup half full, hopefully of Jack Daniels. I'd learned something tonight, besides the legitimacy of the sudden stop thing. I'd learned that somehow, in some bizarre coincidence of fate, Reyes and the Big Bad were connected. But how? Reyes couldn't have been more than 3 when I was born. How did Bad know he would call me Dutch 15 years later? I couldn't have been imagining it. I remembered it so clearly. Dutch. Whispery and soft, deep and mesmerizing, rather like Reyes himself. And the similarities didn't stop there. My mind started registering all kinds of likenesses between the two. The heat and energy that radiated off them both. The way they moved, a blur, very unlike the departed. The paralyzing power of their touches, their stares, the way my knees almost gave beneath my weight with the appearance of either one. Maybe I was losing it. Either that, or Reyes and Bad were the same kind of being. But how was that even possible? I needed a second opinion. As Cookie pulled her Taurus into the parking lot, I said, "I saw him again." She braked short and looked at me. "When I fell through the skylight," I added.
"Reyes?" she asked in disbelief.
"No, I don't know." Fatigue seeped into my voice. I'm beginning to wonder about a lot of things. She nodded her head in understanding, eased up to the curb, and turned off the engine.
"I've been doing some research. It's late, but I have a feeling you won't be able to sleep until some of your questions are answered."
After Cookie more or less carried me into my apartment, she went to check on Amber. I shouted out a hey to Mr. Wong, then put on a pot of coffee in my brand new coffee pot that, according to the card and bow attached, had been provided by the good people at AAA Electric for the investigation I did on the missing switchgears, whatever the heck a switchgear was, and why ever the heck anyone would steal one. It was red. The coffee pot, not the switchgear. I had no idea what color switchgears were, as I'd discovered the thief long before it came to that. Still, I doubted they were red.
I poured a small glass of milk and downed it so I could take 4 ibuprofen at once without tearing up the lining of my stomach. I'd refused the prescription painkillers the doctor in the ER had offered. Scripps and I didn't generally get along, but the soreness was already infiltrating my muscles, stiffening them until I thought they would break with each move I made. That fall may not have done any permanent damage, but the temporary crap was gonna suck. I could barely breathe. Still, even a slight ability to breathe was better than a non-existent one. Between visiting Mark Rear in jail, chasing Rocket around the asylum, breaking into the law offices, and falling through the skylight at the warehouse, I had yet to get my hands on a computer long enough to search the prison database for more information on Reyes. As I eased into the chair at my computer, Cookie strode in with an armful of notes and printouts. Knowing her, she'd already researched Reyes's life down to his shoe size and blood type. I logged on to the New Mexico Department of Corrections website while she poured us some coffee. 10 seconds later, thanks to fiber optics, Reyes's mugshot shone brightly on the screen. "My God," Cookie said from behind me, apparently experiencing the same visceral reaction to Reyes that I did every time I looked at him. She set a cup beside me. "Thank you," I said. "And I'm sorry I had to call you out in the middle of the night." She pulled up a chair, sat down, and put a hand over mine. "Charlie, do you honestly think it bothers me one iota that you called me?" Was that a trick question? "Well, yes, with a sprinkle of duh on top. Who wouldn't be upset?" "I wouldn't," she said, taken aback, as if I'd hurt her feelings for even suggesting such a thing. "I would have been furious had you not called me. I know you're special and you have an extraordinary gift that I'll never fully understand, but you're still human, and you're still my best friend." Her face transformed into a map of worry lines. "I wasn't upset that you called me. I was upset because you think you're indestructible. You're not." She paused to let her gaze bore into mine to drive her point home. It was sweet. "And because of this false sense of security, you get yourself into the most bizarre situations." "Bizarre?" I asked, pretending to be offended. "3 words. Sewage plant disaster." "That totally wasn't my fault," I argued, balking at the very idea of it, as if. She pursed her lips and waited for me to come to my senses. "Okay, it was my fault." She knew me too well, but only a little, and those rats had it coming. "So, what did you find out?" I asked, looking back at Reyes's picture. Cookie thumbed through the printouts and slid one out. "Are you ready for this?" "As long as it doesn't contain nude pictures of elderly women, I'm good." I kept my eyes locked onto Reyes's, fierce and intense as they were. She handed me the printout. "Murder." "No," I whispered, as if the wind had been forced out of my lungs. It was a news article dated 10 years earlier. "No, no, 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 anything but murder, or rape, or kidnapping, or armed robbery, or indecent exposure, because that's just creepy." I scanned the article with a reluctant eye, like when you pass by an accident and can't help but look. "Albuquerque man found guilty." Short, to the point. "A man with a past more mysterious than the circumstances surrounding his father's death was found guilty Monday after 3 days of jury deliberation. The prosecution faced several unusual problems during the trial, such as the fact that Reyes Alexander Farrow, 20, doesn't exist." Reyes Alexander Farrow. I stopped a moment, tried to catch my breath, to slow my pulse. Even Reyes's name gave me heart palpitations. And he didn't exist? Heck, I could have told them that. "Farrow has no birth certificate," the prosecution stated after the 2-week trial ended. "He has no medical records, no social security number, no school records beyond a 3-month stint at Yucca High. On paper, this man is a ghost." A ghost. As Morpheus would say, fate is not without a sense of irony. "Farrow's father, Earl Walker, was found dead in his car after a group of hikers discovered it at the bottom of a canyon 5 miles east of Albuquerque. Though his body had been burned beyond recognition, the autopsy concluded that he died from blunt force trauma to the head. Several witnesses saw Farrow fighting with his father the day before Walker was reported missing by his fiancée." "Our hands were tied," Stan Eichmann, the lead defense attorney for Farrow, stated after the verdict was handed down. There is much more to this case than meets the eye. I guess we'll never know how it could have turned out. Eichmann's statement was only one of dozens of mysteries surrounding this case. For example, Walker has no Social Security number either and has never filed a single tax return. He had nothing that would establish him as a law-abiding citizen, Eichmann said. He seemed to be living under several aliases. It took weeks to track down what we believe was his real name. This is actually more common than you might think, the prosecution stated. But it's a choice career criminals make as adults. Pharaoh, on the other hand, has never existed. According to our records, he was never born, and DNA results conclude that Walker was not his biological father. Based on what we know about him, if I had to guess, I'd say Reyes Pharaoh was quite possibly abducted as a child. My breath caught in my chest. Could he really have been abducted? I quickly scanned the rest of the article. Pharaoh never took the stand in his own defense, leaving jurors hard-pressed to see past the circumstantial evidence, despite the defense's success at debunking several key theories pertinent to the prosecution's strategy. The article went on to talk about Walker's fiancée, Sarah Hadley. She testified that Reyes had threatened Walker on several occasions, right, and that they were both in fear for their lives. Yet another witness, an associate of Ms. Hadley's, refuted the statement, swearing under oath that Walker's fiancée was secretly in love with Pharaoh and would have left Walker in a heartbeat to be with him. The witness stated that if Ms. Hadley was afraid of anyone, it was of Walker himself. This is a case about a broken heart and a broken mind, Eichmann told the jury minutes before they broke for deliberation. Walker's criminal record alone casts numerous doubts as to the legitimacy of anything even remotely resembling a motive by his only child. His only child? But Reyes had a sister. The circumstances surrounding his death are about as transparent as I am, Eichmann continued. Pharaoh, who had been taking night classes with a stolen Social Security number before his arrest, ironically toward a law degree, stood impassively, his head bowed slightly as the verdict was read. My heart sank in my chest with the image of Reyes standing in a courtroom, waiting for his peers to judge him, to find him guilty or innocent. I wondered what he felt, how he coped with their decision. The mystery that is Reyes Pharaoh deepens by the minute, I said. Walker's fiancée was, for lack of a better phrase, full of shit. Abused children rarely attack their abusers, much less torment them, and women were never secretly in love with someone who they believe might kill them at any moment. But murder, Charlie. Do you know how many people are in prison for crimes they didn't commit? You think Reyes is innocent? In my dreams. I'd have to see him in person to know for certain. Her brows slid together.
Is that part of your ability?
Though I never really thought of it that way, I said, Yeah, I guess it is. I forget that not everyone can see what I see.
Speaking of which, you said you saw him again tonight? Were you talking about Reyes?
Oh, right. I straightened, then winced with the action and burrowed back into my seat, wondering where to begin. Better just to get it all out in the open, air my dirty laundry, so to speak. You know how I've never told you certain things because I didn't want you to have to seek therapy? Cookie laughed.
Yes, but you know you can tell me anything.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, because you're about to get a crash course in all things grim. I'm lost.
Aren't you usually? She said, mischief glittering in her eyes.
Funny, I'm not talking about my usual state of confusion. This is different.
Different from utter chaos?
When I scowled, feigning annoyance, she shifted in her chair and said,
Okay. You have my complete attention.
But I was still stuck on the utter chaos thing. Cookie was right. My life tended to be in either park or overdrive, careening through traffic with little thought to the cars around me or the destination. I do just sort of stumble through life, don't I?
Well, yeah, but that's okay, she said with a one-shouldered shrug.
You think?
Sure. We're all just sort of stumbling through life, if you ask me.
Still, this whole Grim Reaper thing should have come with a manual, or a diagram of some kind. A flowchart would have been nice.
Oh, you're right, Cookie said with her supportive I've-got-your-back head nod. One with colored arrows, huh?
And simple, easy-to-read yes-no questions like,
Did Death Incarnate visit you today? If no, skip to step 10. If yes, stop now, because you are so screwed, girlfriend. You may as well call it a day. Take a deep breath, because this is going to hurt. You might want to phone a friend about now. Tell her to kiss your ass goodbye. I realized Cookie wasn't doing her supportive I've got your back head nod thing anymore. I glanced at her suddenly pale face. It was kind of pretty. Sure made the blue in her eyes stand out. Cookie? Just as I was about to check for a pulse, she whispered, Death Incarnate? Oops. Oh, that, I said with a dismissive wave of my hand. He's not really Death Incarnate. He just looks like Death Incarnate. Come to think of it, he looks like Death. I glanced up in thought and decided to ignore the cobwebs in the light fixture for the time being. He kind of looks like, well, a Grim Reaper. Except I'm a Grim Reaper and he looks nothing like me. But if I didn't know what Grim Reapers really look like, not that I've ever met one besides myself, I'd say that's exactly what he resembles. I glanced back at her. Yep, Death Incarnate should just about cover it.
Death Incarnate? There really is such a thing?
Perhaps I was going about this the wrong way. He's not really Death. He's kind of cool, I guess, in a terrifying way. She whitened further. Darn it. When you eventually have to seek therapy, will I have to pay for it?
No, she said, straightening her shoulders, pretending to have everything under control. I'm good. You just took me by surprise, that's all.
She waved me on with a wiggle of her fingers.
Go ahead. I can handle this.
Swear? I asked, suspicious of the blue around her lips.
Pinky swear. Crash course. I am so ready.
When she gripped the arms of the chair as if preparing for an aerial assault, my doubts reemerged. What the bloody heck was I doing, besides scarring her for life? I can't do this, I said, reevaluating my telling her everything just so I could tell her about Bad in the warehouse to get her opinion on the whole thing. I couldn't do that to Cookie. I'm sorry, I should never have mentioned any of this. She peeled her hands off the arms of her chair and looked at me, purpose glimmering in her eyes.
Charlie, you can tell me anything. I promise not to freak out on you again.
When my gaze turned to one of utter doubt, she clarified,
I promise to try not to freak out on you again.
It's not your fault, I said, bowing my head. There are some things people are better off not knowing. I can't believe what I almost did to you. I apologize. One of the consequences of my being honest with those close to me was the effect it had on their psyche. I learned long ago that, yes, it hurt when people didn't believe me. But when they did, their lives were changed forever. They never saw the world the same again, and such a perspective could be devastating. I chose very carefully who I let in, and I told only one other person on Earth about Bad, a decision I've regretted ever since. Cookie edged back into her chair, picked up her cup, and gazed into it.
Do you remember the first time you told me what you are?
I thought back a moment. Just barely. If you'll recall, I was into my third margarita.
Do you remember what you said?
Third margarita?
You said, and I quote, Cookie, I'm the Grim Reaper.
And you believed me? I asked, incredulity raising my brows.
Yes, she said, coming to animated life, without a shadow of a doubt. By that point, I'd seen too much not to believe you. So what on earth could you tell me now that would sound worse?
You might be surprised, I hedged. She frowned.
Is it really that bad?
It's not that it's bad, I explained, trying to allow her to keep a little of her innocence and possibly her sanity. Just maybe a little less believable.
Oh, right, because there's a Grim Reaper on every street corner these days.
She had a point. More often than not, however, my abilities got me into trouble and took away people whom I believed I could trust. Those facts alone made me hesitant now, no matter how much I thought of Cookie. Honestly, what had I been thinking? Sometimes my selfishness astounded me. When I was in high school, I said, angling for the old it's for your own good spiel, I told my best friend too much. Our friendship ended badly because of it. I just don't want that to happen to us. Not that I could place all the blame on Jessica. Past experience and my mad skill at reading people should have stopped me from telling my ex-best friend more than she could handle. Still, Her sudden and complete hatred of all things Charlie Davidson struck hard. I simply couldn't comprehend where her hostilities were coming from. We were best friends one minute, then mortal enemies the next. It was such a shock. I still thought about it often, even though I realized years later she'd just been scared of what I could do, of what was out there, of what my abilities meant in the grand scheme of things. But at the time, I was devastated, betrayed once again by someone I'd loved, by someone I'd thought loved me. Between Jessica's hostilities and my stepmother's indifference, I sank into a very deep depression, one that I hid well with sarcasm and sass, but the incident sparked a cycle of self-destructive behavior that took me years to crawl out of. Oddly enough, Reyes was the one who knocked me out of the depression itself. His situation made me appreciate what I had, namely, a father who didn't kick my ass for the sheer joy of it. I had a dad who loved me, a commodity Reyes lacked. Yet he wasn't wallowing in a cesspool of self-pity. His life was 100 times worse than mine, but he didn't feel the least bit sorry for himself. Not from what I'd seen, anyway. So I'd put my little pity party on hold. Trust, however, was another issue. Trusting the living had never been my strong suit to begin with. But this was Cookie, the best friend I'd ever had. She'd accepted everything I ever told her without doubt or contempt or instantaneous musings of monetary gain.
And you think I won't be able to handle what you tell me?
No, that's just it. If anyone can handle it, you can. I just don't know if I want to do that to you. I put a hand on her arm and leaned forward, willing her to understand. It's not always better knowing. After a long pause, she gathered the files with a weak smile on her face.
Your abilities are a part of you, Charlie, a part of who you are. I don't think there's a thing you could tell me that would change my perception of you.
It's not your perception of me I'm worried about.
It's late, she said, slipping papers into a file folder, and you need to get to bed.
Had I hurt her feelings? Did she think I didn't want her to know? The thought of sharing every part of my life with a very best friend whom I could confide in completely was like finding the pot of green chili stew at the end of the rainbow. Did I dare? Could I risk one of the best things that had ever happened to me? It was late, but as wonderful as slipping into unconsciousness sounded, the thought of telling Cookie everything, of her knowing the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, had my adrenaline pumping. It would be nice to have someone to trust in. A confidant, a comrade in arms and hair gel, despite the fact that it was almost 2 in the morning and I was exhausted and sore and near comatose. I just prayed neither of us was biting off more than we could chew. I did that once with bubblegum. It wasn't pleasant. Maybe I could take a chance, just this once. Maybe she'd come out of it unscathed and as sane as she was going in. Not that that was saying much, but still. I ran a finger along the edge of my coffee mug, unable to meet her gaze. I was about to change her life forever, and not necessarily in a good way. He's like smoke, I said, and I felt her still beside me. And he's powerful. I can feel it pulse off him in waves. It makes me weak when he's near, like he absorbs a part of me. She sat quiet for a few stunned moments, then placed the files back on the desk. She'd crossed a schism, a gap between 2 worlds that few people even knew about. As of this point in time, Cookie Kowalski would never be the same again.
And that's who you saw today? She asked.
In the warehouse, yes, but this morning as well when Reyes appeared in the office.
This being was there?
No. I'm beginning to think he and Reyes are the same kind of being. But Reyes is real, a human. And then I keep seeing these blurs lately and having unimaginable sex in my sleep. And then he shows up in my shower.
Shower?
And he called me Dutch the day I was born, just like Reyes. Only Reyes was too young to be there when I was born. Duh, so how did he know? How did the big bad know what Reyes would call me 15 years later? The coffee mug slipped from my fingers as Cookie placed it on the desk.
No more caffeine.
Sorry, I said, trying to suppress a sheepish grin.
We should start at the beginning.
She patted my arm in support.
Unless you want to start with the shower scene.
There's just so much I've never told you, Cookie. It's a lot to handle.
Charlie, you're a lot to handle.
I chuckled, snatched my cup back, and down the last of my coffee.
When did you first have contact with this being?
The day I was born. Wasn't she listening? That was the first time I saw the big bad, I said, adding air quotes for effect.
The big,
he's the smoke. He's this creature slash monster type thing that shows up at the most bizarre times, mostly when my life is in danger. We should make popcorn.
She scooted to the edge of her seat.
And he was there the day you were born?
Yep. I just call him the big bad because humongous slithering creature that scares the ever-loving piss out of me is too long.
Cookie nodded, enthralled with where my story might lead, aware by now that my accounts were a bit more engrossing than the average my aunt had a ghost living in her attic tale. Mine were not the stuff of campfires or slumber parties, which could explain the lack of invitations growing up.
Anywho, like I said, he was there the day I was born.
She held her cup in limbo between the table and her mouth, trying very hard not to drool. I hadn't realized until that moment how much she'd been craving to know more, how much my silence had affected her.
With brow knitting, she asked, "So, how do you know that? Did someone tell you?"
"Tell me what?" My coffee mug was pretty. It had a tiger lily on it, my favorite flower. I was studying it in an attempt to keep my eyes off Reyes.
"That this big, bad creature was there when you were born."
What? What the heck was she talking about? Maybe I was unconsciously slipping into unconsciousness after all.
"How did you know it was there the day you were born?"
Oh, right. She didn't know that part yet, either. "I pretty much remember everything from day one."
"Day one?"
I nodded, noticing for the first time that one petal of the tiger lily brushed the rim of the mug just so.
"Day one of what? The first grade? Desert Storm? Your menstrual cycle?"
She hissed in a breath of realization.
"That's it. It all happened when you had your first period, a hormone thing, right? That's when you figured it all out?"
I grinned. She was funny.
"Day one of my life, my existence, my presence on Earth."
"I'm not following."
"The day I was born," I said with a roll of my eyes. Cookie wasn't usually this slow on the uptake.
She sat in stunned silence after that. It was weird.
"I know, that throws everyone."
After running my finger along the brightest orange petal, I added, "Apparently it's rather rare for people to remember the day they were born." The petals opened in an explosion of color, darkest at the center, at its most vulnerable point.
"Rare?" she asked, finding her voice at last. "Seriously? Try non-existent."
"Well, that's just odd." I traced the next petal. "I remember it like it was yesterday.
Not that yesterday isn't fuzzy."
Then I ran out of petals, and my gaze drifted up and locked onto Reyes's again. The pain and anger in his expression were almost palpable, and the color of his eyes, the rich, deep brown, grew darker as it neared the centers, their most vulnerable points.
"My God, Charlie. You remember being born?"
"I remember him."
"This big bad guy?"
"The big bad. And I remember other things, too, like the doctor cutting the cord and the nurses cleaning me off."
Cookie sat back in astonishment.
"He said my name, or what I thought was my name."
She inhaled a breath of realization.
"He called you Dutch."
"Yes, but how? How could he possibly have known?"
"Hun, I'm still working on the day you were born thing."
"Right, sorry. But could you hurry up and get over it? I have questions."
Her expression turned dubious.
"Got any other astonishing tidbits to impart?"
With a shrug, I said, "Not really. Unless you count the fact that I've known every language ever spoken since that whole day I was born thing. That's probably worthy of note."
I was tired, so I couldn't be completely positive, but I had the distinct feeling Cookie seized. Chapter 10. Don't fear the Reaper. Just be very, very aware of her. Charlotte Davidson.
So I look up, and there he is.
Cookie held a piece of popcorn at her lips as she listened to my tale, her eyes wide with astonishment, or possibly primal, bone-chilling fear. It was hard to tell at that point.
"The Big Bad," she said.
"Right, but you can call him Bad for short. Anywho, he's standing there just watching, and I'm all naked and covered in afterbirth, though that didn't really register at the time. I just remember being mesmerized by him. He seemed to be in a constant state of fluid motion."
"Like smoke?"
"Like smoke," I said, as I snatched the buttery morsel out of her hand and popped it into my mouth. "You snooze, you lose, chica."
"Do you remember anything before him?" she asked as she reached for another piece, only to hold it in limbo at her mouth as well.
I was trying not to crack up and break the spell. "Not so much. I mean, I don't remember being born or anything, thank the gods, because that would just be gross. Just the stuff that came after. And it's all very peach fuzzy, except for him. And my mom."
"Wait," she said, holding up a finger. "Your mom? But your mom died the day you were born. You remember her?"
A slow smile slid across my face. "She was so beautiful, Cookie. She was my first, customer."
"You mean..."
"Yes. She passed through me. She was light and warmth and unconditional love. I didn't understand it at the time, but she told me she was happy to give up her life so that I could live. She made me feel calm and cherished, which was a good thing because Bad was kind of freaking me out." Her gaze slid past me as she processed what I'd said.
That's
impossible to believe, I know."
"Amazing."
She looked at me then. The relief that flooded my body couldn't be helped. I should have known she'd believe me. But people I'd grown up with, people I was closest to, never believed the being born thing.
"So you kind of got to know your mom in a way, right?"
"I did. And as I grew older, I realized it was more than a lot of kids got. I would be forever grateful for those few moments we had together."
"And you know every language that's ever been spoken on Earth?"
"Thankful for the change in subject," I replied. "Every single one."
"Even Farsi?"
"Even Farsi," I said with a grin.
"Oh my goodness," she almost shouted.
A thought must have popped into her brain. Then her features changed, darkened, and she pointed an accusative finger at me.
"I knew it. I knew you understood what that Vietnamese man said to me that day in the market. I could see it in your eyes."
I smiled and looked back at Reyes's image, fell into him. "He said he liked your ass."
She gasped. "Why, that little perv.
Told you he had the hots for you.
Too bad he was small enough to fit into my cleavage."
"I think that's why he liked you," I said, a bubble of laughter slipping out. Cookie sat silent a long while after that. I gave her some time to absorb everything I was telling her. After a moment, she asked,
"How is it even possible?"
"Well," I said, deciding to tease her, "I don't think he could have actually fit in your cleavage, though I'm sure he would have enjoyed the challenge."
"No, I mean the language thing. It's just so..."
"Freakishly cool?" I asked, my voice hopeful.
"Mind-boggling."
"Oh yeah, I guess it is."
"And you understood what people were saying to you on the day you were born?"
With my nose crinkling in thought, I said, "Kind of. Not literally, however. I had no schema, no past to relate the words to, no meaning to process it with. When people spoke to me, I understood them on a visceral level. Oddly enough, I talked and walked and did everything else at a normal rate. But when anyone talks to me, I understand them, no matter what language they're speaking. I just know what they're saying." I nudged my mouse when the screensaver popped up, forced the image back to Reyes. "I understood the first words my father ever said to me, too," I continued, trying to disguise the sadness in my voice. "For the most part, anyway. He told me my mother had died." Cookie shook her head.
"I'm so sorry."
"I think my dad knew. I think he knew I understood him. It was like our little secret." I grabbed a handful of popcorn and tossed a piece into my mouth. "Then he married my stepmother and everything changed. She figured out pretty quick I was a freak. It all started when I got hooked on Mexican soap operas."
"Charlie, you're not a freak."
"It's okay. I can't blame her."
"Yes, you can," she said, her voice suddenly honed to a razor's edge. "I'm a mother, too. Mothers don't do that, step or otherwise."
"Yeah, but Amber wasn't born a Grim Reaper."
"It doesn't matter.
She's your stepmother, period. It's not like you became a serial killer.
God, I loved having someone on my side. My dad had always loved me without reservation, but he never really had my back like that. I think Cookie would have taken on the mafia single-handedly for me, and won.
So, the day you were born, that's when he called you Dutch?
Yes.
Now, was this before or after your mother crossed through you?
After. But I just don't get it. How did he know? I never realized until tonight that Bad didn't say my actual name that day. He didn't call me Charlotte. He called me Dutch Cookie, just like Reyes did when I was in high school. How could he have known?
My mind started spinning, trying desperately to put the pieces together. Okay, let me ask you this, she said, her forehead crinkling in thought. The first time you saw Reyes, did you notice anything unusual about him? Besides the fact that he was getting his ass kicked by Psycho Dad? Yes.
I pulled in a long, deep breath and thought about it. You know, I may have, but didn't realize it at the time. I mean, maybe there was something different, something supernatural. But all the adrenaline flooding my body had me thinking it was just the direness of the moment. He was so magnificent, so beautiful and agile and perfect.
From the way you've described it, maybe Reyes is some kind of supernatural being. The fact that he took a beating like that and just walked away like you seem to do every other week has me wondering.
I'd never looked at it that way. As I thought back to that night, the memory both unsettling and fascinating, I could see Reyes in my mind. You know what? I asked in realization. He was different. He was, I don't know, dark, unreadable.
Well, he sounds suspiciously supernatural to me.
If I hadn't been so tired, I would have laughed. You're suddenly the expert?
If it's hot and dark, yeah, pretty much.
This time I did laugh.
So how many times have you seen Bad? She asked, seeming to come to terms with everything I'd told her.
This was good. Productive. Cheaper than therapy. Not many.
Well, when you saw him, what happened?
I picked up my cup and took a sip of the hot chocolate Cookie had insisted I switch to. She placed a hand on my shoulder, a knowing look on her face.
In the park, with the Johnson girl.
When I placed the cup down, I tried to do so with as much nonchalance as I could muster. Thinking of the incident with the Johnson girl was like running a finger over a raw nerve. I had been trying to help a mother out of the grieving hole she had withdrawn into when her daughter went missing. Instead, I caused a town scandal that ended up being the final straw for my stepmother. She turned against me that day and never looked back. So yes, the incident was a sore spot on my psyche, but I had worse. I had gaping wounds that refused to heal, and Cookie knew only a minute amount about them. Yes, I said, raising my chin. In the park, that was the third time I saw him.
But your life wasn't in danger, or was it?
Not at all, but maybe he thought it was. He was so mad, I think because my stepmom was yelling at me in front of all these people. My head lowered at the memory. And she slapped me. It was quite a shock. I locked eyes with Cookie, suddenly wanting her to understand how afraid I was of him. I thought he was going to kill her. He was shaking with anger. I felt it like electricity prickling over my skin. I whispered to him as my stepmother berated me in front of half the town and begged him not to hurt her. Cookie's mouth thinned in sympathy.
Charlie, I'm so very sorry.
It's okay. I'm just not sure why he scares me so much. I can't believe what a wuss I can be at times.
I'm sorry that he scares you too, but I meant the part about your stepmother.
Oh, no, don't be, I said, shaking my head. That was totally my fault.
You were 5.
After a hard swallow, I bowed my head and said, You don't know what I did.
Unless you doused the woman in gasoline and set her on fire, I'm not sure her reaction was appropriate.
A half smile crept across my face. I can assure you no petroleum products were harmed in the making of that memory.
What happened then, with Bad?
I guess he heard me. He left, but he was not a happy camper. Cookie nodded in understanding, then said,
And I would be willing to bet one of the times he showed up was when you were in college.
Wow, you're good.
You know, You've told me about how you were attacked when you were walking home after a class one night, but you didn't tell me he was there.
Yep, he was. He saved me, just like he did when I was 4.
Surprise washed over her face.
4? What happened when you were 4? Wait, he saved you when you were attacked in college?
How? She asked, stumbling over the questions that were surely tumbling through her head.
I realized my description and taxonomy of the big bad may have led Cookie to believe that he was, well, big and bad. And he was, kind of. But I still couldn't tell her how he saved me. I couldn't do that to her, not until I knew she'd be okay with the knowledge. He got the guy off me.
Oh my goodness, Charlie. I guess I didn't realize. I mean, you made it sound so minuscule. And your life had been in danger?
With a shrug, I said, maybe a little. There was a switchblade involved. I didn't even know they still made those things. Aren't they illegal?
He shows up when your life is in danger, she repeated, deep in thought. And he saved you when you were 4? So what happened when you were 4 again?
I shifted in my chair, so sore I could barely manage it. Well, I was kind of kidnapped, though not really kidnapped so much as led away. A hand shot to her mouth to squelch a gasp. God, all this sounds so awful when I say it out loud, I complained. I whine more than a goth with a blogging fetish. It's really not that bad. I actually grew up rather happy. I had lots of friends. They were mostly dead, but still.
Charlie Jean Davidson, she said in warning. You cannot use the word kidnapped in a sentence, then not elaborate.
Fine, if you really want to know. But you're not going to like it.
I really want to know.
After a long, breathy sigh, I said, it happened here.
Here? In Albuquerque?
Here in this building, when I was 4.
You've lived in this building before?
I suddenly felt like I was in therapy, and all the things that had happened to me in the past, both good and bad, were gushing from a festering wound. But what happened in this building was the worst of the worst. The knife in my flesh, buried so deep inside me I doubted it could ever be extracted fully, at least not without some serious anesthesia. No, I said, drawing another sip, testing the rich, warm chocolate on my tongue before swallowing. I've never lived here. But even before my dad bought the bar, it had been a cop hangout, and he'd taken me to it on several occasions, quite innocently, mostly for birthday parties and such. And a few times he had to chat with his partner, as those were the 80s, B.C., When Cookie's brows slanted in question, I added, before cells.
Of course.
But on one particular occasion, I'd upset my stepmother when I told her in a rather matter-of-fact way that her father had died and had crossed through me because he wanted me to give her a message. She hadn't known yet that he'd passed away, and she was furious, refused to listen. She never even let me give her the message. I didn't understand it anyway. Something about blue towels.
She wouldn't listen even after she found out he'd actually passed away?
Absolutely not. By that time, Denise was anti-anything death-related. Cookie took a deep breath as if to calm her nerves.
The woman never ceases to amaze me.
You should try her meatloaf. It'll put some pretty coarse hair on your chest.
She chuckled. I have enough hair to deal with, thank you very much. I'll pass on family night at the Davidsons. I shrugged.
Your loss.
So, you were 4?
Gee, she was so pushy. Right, 4. So, my feelings were hurt as usual, and when we drove to the bar where my dad was having a beer, Denise left me on the bench by the kitchen to go tell on me to Dad. I loved it in the kitchen, but I was all mad and hurt, so I decided to run away. When Mr. Dunlop, the cook, wasn't looking, I snuck out the back.
A 4-year-old alone at night on Central? Her parents' worst nightmare.
Yeah, well, I figured I'd show her, I said. I wasn't the brightest 4-year-old on Central. Of course, the minute I stepped outside, I changed my mind. Not that I was scared. I don't get scared like most people. I was just aware. But before I could dash back inside, a super nice man in a trench coat offered to help me find my stepmother. Oddly, instead of going into the bar where I knew she was, we came into this building.
Oh, honey, she whispered, despair in her voice.
But nothing happened, I said with a lift of my shoulders. Like I said, Bad saved me. Trying to make light of a dark situation, I added, looking back, I don't think that man ever planned to help me find my stepmother.
Cookie reached toward me and wrapped me into a huge, long hug. It made me think of warm fires on winter nights, and for some reason, roasting marshmallows. After like an hour and 27 minutes, I mumbled, "Can't breathe." She leaned back with her brows creased in thought.
"Is it just me, or does the fact that you live in the same building you were abducted into seem a bit morbid?"
"It's just you," I said, discounting the entire bizarre, ghoulish thing. I was so happy she didn't push for more details. The devil was in the details, and I wasn't feeling particularly satanic at that moment.
"Oh," I said, remembering another incident. "This guy in high school tried to run me over with his dad's SUV. Bad shoved the vehicle through a store window."
The memory brought a smile to my face.
"Someone tried to run you over in high school?" she asked, appalled.
"Only that one time," I answered. She pinched the bridge of her nose, then asked,
"So those are the only times you've seen Bad?"
I counted off silently with my fingers. "Yep, that just about covers it."
"And our job is to figure out how Reyes plays into all of this."
"Yep, again. We should roast marshmallows."
"Then I feel it my duty," she continued unfazed, "as friend and confidant, to analyze in panoramic detail the shower scene."
I held back a giggle. "I'm not really sure the shower scene plays into this on a salient level. It seems more, I don't know, non-salient."
"Charlie," she said in warning, "spill or die a slow and painful death. Who was in the shower with you? Reyes? The big bad? Work with me here."
"Okay," I said, acquiescing. "You know that Reyes called me Dutch that night when I was 15, right?"
"Right," she said, clearly impatient to jump to the shower scene. "And you know about the beautiful man showing up in my dreams every night for the past month, right?"
"Right," she said, a sigh softening her voice. "Well, today, Dream Guy wrote Dutch in the condensation on my mirror, and he called me Dutch in the shower."
"Now we're talking."
She scooted to the edge of her seat, then stopped abruptly in realization.
"So, Dream Guy is Reyes?"
"That's what I mean. I realized tonight Bad called me Dutch the day I was born." She frowned in confusion.
"So, who was in the shower?"
I grinned and gazed at her, suddenly in awe of the woman sitting beside me. "You know, I just told you that this big scary creature follows me around and saves my life every so often, and that I remember the day I was born, and that I know every language ever spoken, and you have yet to run out of the room screaming. How can you just accept what I say?" After a long, thoughtful pause, she asked,
"Are you purposely trying to change the subject?"
A deep chuckle almost doubled me over. I grabbed my aching ribs and cried out, "Stop! Don't make me laugh! It hurts!"
"Sorry."
She wasn't, I could tell. "What did you find out from the prison?" I asked, my tearful gaze returning to the screen. "Is Reyes still there? Is he alive?"
"All the officer could tell me was that Reyes was still listed as an inmate in the prison registry, housed in D unit. But I have to say, I got the feeling she wasn't telling me everything."
"I'm going tomorrow."
"To the prison?"
"Yes." I clicked on the personnel files that listed the administrators of the prison and highlighted the picture of Neil Gossett. "I went to school with a deputy warden."
"Really? Friend or foe?"
I wondered the same thing myself. "That's a tough call. Had I suddenly burst into flames in the school lunchroom, I doubt he would have sacrificed his vitamin D to save me, but I'm pretty sure he would have felt guilty about it later."
"Oh my goodness," Cookie said, gazing wide-eyed at another article in her hands.
I leaned over, winced at the pain the movement caused, then stopped when I read the last paragraph of the article. Uncle Bob had been the lead detective in the case against Reyes.
Well, crap.